This is the NBC Theater. From the NBC Theater in Hollywood, we bring you an hour-length dramatization of a slim and tender novel that is significant far beyond its length. Christopher Isherwood's Trotter Violet. The air adaptation is by Richard E. Davis of NBC. And at intermission, you will hear a commentary on the writings of Christopher Isherwood by Irwin Edmond, author and professor of philosophy at Columbia University. Dr. Edmond transcribed his commentary in New York earlier this week. Here now, Trotter Violet.
There is one question which we seldom ask each other directly. It is too brutal. And yet it is the only question worth asking our fellow travelers. What makes you go on living? Why don't you kill yourself? Why is all this bearable? What makes you better? Perhaps I had supposed vaguely it is a kind of balance, a complex of tension. You did whatever comes next on the list. Meals to be eaten, one's job, books. There is always something new. There has to be. Otherwise the balance would be upset. The tension would break. It seemed to me that I had always done whatever people recommended. You were born. It was like entering a restaurant. The waiter came forward with a lot of suggestions. For me, the waiter had recommended teddy bears, football, cigarettes, motorbikes, whiskey, Bach, poker, the culture of classical Greece. And then there was always death, the recommendation yet to come, but to be considered always. In 1935, the waiter recommended movies and Dr. Friedrich Bergmann. And both of these entered my life on the same morning.
Good morning, Christopher.
Good morning, Mother. How are you?
A little surprised to see you down so early. I thought you were going to work late last night.
So I was, but I couldn't seem to get started on Chapter 11, so I chucked the whole thing for a good night's sleep and fresh start this morning. Any mail?
Not yet, but there was a phone call for you. I told them you were sleeping. They said they'd call back.
Did they say who it was?
Well, unless I'm terribly mistaken, they were saying something about a bulldog.
Oh, really?
Well, that's how it seemed to me. But then when they said they'd call back, I thought, oh, I just won't discuss it with them.
You were probably very wise.
You take it, Christopher. It's probably them again.
Hello?
Mr. Isherwood?
Yes, Isherwood here.
Christopher Isherwood?
Yes, who is this, please?
Imperial Bulldog Pictures.
Is it the Bulldog people?
Just a moment, Mother. Who did you say you were?
Imperial Bulldog Pictures.
Oh?
I'm speaking to Mr. Chatsworth.
Do I know Mr. Chatsworth?
Mr. Chatsworth is the head of Imperial Bulldog Pictures.
Oh, indeed.
Yes. By the way, were you ever in Blackpool any time during 1930?
Well, this is all very confusing. I've never been in Blackpool in my life.
Splendid.
Who is it, Christopher?
I'm sending people.
Are they taking a survey?
I say...
I'm glad to hear that you weren't in Blackpool, because that means you never saw a show called Trotter Violet.
Never? But what's that got to do with anything?
Trotter Violet folded after three nights. But Mr. Chatsworth likes the music, and he thinks we can use most of the living. Your agent says you know all about Vienna.
Vienna? Well, that's...
Oh, but that's impossible, surely. We were given to understand that you lived there.
They must have meant Berlin.
Oh, Berlin. Oh, well, that's pretty much the same kind of setup, isn't it? Mr. Chatsworth wanted someone with a continental touch. Bulldog is bringing over director Friedrich Bergmann from Vienna to direct.
Mm-hmm.
Friedrich Bergmann, you know. You must have worked with him.
Never, started to say.
Oh, that's funny. Bergmann worked in Berlin a lot, too. Weren't you ever in pictures over there?
I've never been in pictures anywhere.
You haven't? Oh, well, it'll all be the same to Mr. Chatsworth, I imagine. He often uses writers who haven't had any experience. If I were you, I wouldn't worry. I'll get back to you, Mr. Isherwood.
Wait a minute. Oh, bah.
Your egg is ready, Christopher.
Oh, thanks. Do you know who that was? Imperial Bulldog Pictures.
Oh, then that explains this morning. Did they want you to write something?
Apparently.
How thrilling that sounds. What's the film going to be about? Or mustn't you tell?
It's a musical comedy called Trotter Violet that played at Blackpool in 1930.
Oh, I see. When are you going to start?
I'm not. I'm a writer. Movies don't interest me.
Didn't they offer you enough money?
We didn't talk money.
No, of course you didn't. Your agent does all that, doesn't he? He'll know how to squeeze the last drop out of them. How much shall you ask for?
Mother, you know how I feel about the film.
I know, dear. And the films nowadays seem to get stupider and stupider. No wonder they can't persuade any good writers to come and work for them, no matter what they offer. But I dare say they'll call again.
Why on earth should they?
Well, they must have wanted you awfully badly, or they wouldn't have rung up so early in the morning.
Well, so they did.
I think it's all very dramatic. Now, dear, do you mind if I turn on the news?
No, that's all. I'll eat my eggs.
Cousin Edith's dentist seems quite convinced that Hitler's going to invade Austria soon.
Oh, indeed. No doubt the dental profession has sources of information denied to the rest
of
them.
And so the withdrawal of Germany from the League of Nations has been accomplished by Mr. Hitler, thus setting the stage for war, according to British military expert Colonel Evelyn J.C.D. Beck Cooper, who predicts a preventative war against the Germans sometime next year. A date which Beck Cooper would not set, but which he stated depended on the completion of the Maginot Line and its being rendered impregnable. In Berlin last night, Mr. Goebbels told the German people that they must vote yes or yes. And in the United States, Colonel Ruby Lafoon of Kentucky has given a colonel's commission to Miss Mae West. And now for the cricket scores.
I've got it, Mother. Hello, Isherwood here.
Hello. Hello, this is Bergmann, Friedrich Bergmann. I wish to speak to Christopher Isherwood personally. Please bring him.
Ich bin Christopher Isherwood here, Dr. Bergmann.
Isherwood? Sie sprechen Deutsch? Marvelous. You speak German, my language. Bravo. Endlich ein vernünftiger Mensch. They tell me you do not work with me on Prater Violet.
I never said that I wouldn't.
Good, then you will come to me when?
Well, now look, I make no promises on the telephone.
Please, come, Isherwood. This is such a difficult city, and you understand my language.
Oh, where are you?
Oh, in a hotel. Where it is, I don't know. But I put somebody on who can tell you. Now, you tell him.
Hello, sir. This is Cowan's Hotel, Bishopsgate. We're just across from the station. You can't miss it. American or European plan?
Enough. Bergmann again, Isherwood. Please, hurry. Hurry. My life is a madness without you. Hurry and goodbye. I wait for you.
But I say... Oh, rubbish.
Is that the bulldog people again, dear?
Same thing. Dr. Bergmann.
Oh, is it a medical picture? I never heard of Dr. Bergmann.
I have. They were talking about him the other night in Soho. One of the most fabulous motion picture directors in the world. German Viennese. Oh, he's really fabulous. Hitler refugee now, you know, but his family is still in Vienna.
Well, then I think the only decent thing you can do is to call on the poor man.
Bergmann had been recommended. And so off I went, wondering why all the way. The hotel was not just across from the station. No place ever is when they tell you that. So having been twice misdirected and once nearly knocked down by a bus, I arrived at the hotel realizing that despite my resolve to take Bergmann calmly, I had run all the way from the underground and was out of breath as I presented myself at the hotel desk.
Yes, sir?
Dr. Bergmann, please.
Oh, it's Mr. Isherwood, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, the doctor will be glad to see you. He's been having a lot of vexation.
Where's he now, upstairs?
Oh, no, sir. He just popped out for some cigarettes. He didn't seem to fancy what we had.
All right, I'll wait.
Oh, if you'll excuse me, sir, you better go after him. He's been gone about 20 minutes already.
Oh, which way?
Around the corner to your left. 3 doors down. You'll be sure to catch him.
How will I know him? We've never met.
Ha ha! You'll know him all right when you see him, sir. You couldn't miss Dr. Bergmann in a million. Just you try the tobacco shop.
A foreign gentleman, sir. He's quite a character, isn't he? We got to talking about dreams. He told me about a doctor someplace abroad who said, your dreams don't mean what you think they mean. He thought he was telling me something.
He didn't tell you which way he was going.
You know, in my flat, I've got a book called The Queen of Sheba's Dream Dictionary. It was written a long time before this here Dr. Freud was even born.
Yes, I'm quite sure. Now, about the foreign gentleman...
Now, suppose you have a dream of sausages, I said. That's a quarrel, unless you're eating them. Then it's love or good health. Same as sneezing and mushrooms.
The foreign gentleman, where has he gone? Can you tell me?
Well, he said he was stopping at the Cowan. He left there going back that road.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, you better take him his cigarettes. He left them lying here on the counter.
Oh, now, sir. He's come and he's gone again.
Oh, no.
Wasn't a minute after you left. Where is he? He asks. Same as you. Then the phone rings. It was a gentleman from the studio, a Mr. Chatsworth. We'd been trying to get him all the morning. Wanted the doctor to come right away, as quick as he could. I said you'd be back in a minute, but he wouldn't wait. He's like that, sir. All impatience. So, I put him in a taxi.
Well, didn't he leave any message?
Yes, sir. You was to meet them for lunch at the Cafe Royal. 1 o'clock, sharp.
Well, I won't be there, do you understand? They'll hear nothing more from me again. Not if they come to my very house and sit on the doorstep all day long. I found them in the grill room. I was 10 minutes late, a little concession to my injured vanity. The head waiter knew Chatsworth and pointed out the table where he sat with a man who had the face of an emperor. That was Bergman. His head was magnificent and massive as sculptured granite. As I walked across the room to him, I studied the big, firm chin, the grim, compressed line of the mouth, the harsh furrows cutting down from the imperious nose. The face was the face of an emperor, but the eyes were the dark, mocking eyes of a slave. The slave who ironically obeyed, watched, and humored, and judged the master who could never understand him. The slave upon whom the master depended entirely for his amusement, for his instruction, for the sanction of his power. The slave who wrote the fables of beasts and men. As for the master, Chatsworth, the great mogul of the British film industry, sat pink and round with great tortoiseshell eyeglasses. Shrewd, intelligent, gracious in a flamboyant manner.
Ah, Mr. Isherwood, we were hoping you'd be our guest.
Mr. Chatsworth, it is a pleasure.
Oh, delightful of you to come. I want you to meet Dr. Bergman.
How do you do? I believe we've met on the phone.
That was unfortunate. Well, won't you have a chair, Isherwood? Mr. Chatsworth has me to lunch to tell me about the British film industry.
Yes, yes, yes. But first we must get Isherwood some lunch. I'm sorry we had to start without you, Isherwood, but not much time these days, you know. Garçon, garçon.
Oui, Monsieur Chatsworth.
Bring my friend here, Mr. Isherwood, some Tournedos Chasseur and some more champagne.
Oui, Monsieur.
Oh, you like it, Isherwood. It's a good combination. I never drink anything but champagne before sunset. I learned to drink it at Monte Carlo. I don't mind telling you, Monte's my spiritual home. Ever been there, Bergman?
We used to go to Cannes.
Huh.
I liked it very much at Cannes.
Oh, I never cared very much about Cannes. Monte's got a je ne sais quoi all its own, you know. I go there every winter to get away from this bloody London fog.
Oh, the fog. I think it's the English themselves who have created the fog. They feed upon it like a kind of bitter soup, which fills them with illusions and hides from them the reality.
Oh, this fellow's a great artist, Isherwood. Only I tell you he should take things more seriously. Bergman? You know, the trouble with this whole business is that more people should be taking pictures more seriously. Do you know what my great, serious movie ambition is?
Huh?
Oh, you'll laugh at me. Everybody does. They'll say I'm crazy, but I don't care. I want to do Tosca with Garbo. Now, what do you say to that?
Oh, it would be unique.
It sounds very unusual.
Right, right. Well, I do it without music, of course. I do it absolutely straight. It's one of the greatest stories in the world. People don't realize that. In the name of heaven, it's a magnificent thing.
It overwhelms me.
And do you know who I want to write it? Somerset Maugham. If I can't get Maugham, I won't do it at all.
Voilà, monsieur. Tournedos Chasseur.
Oh, put it in front of this gentleman. You'll enjoy that, Isherwood. I'm sorry we can't stay with you while you eat, you know, but we got to get back to the studio. Come on, come on. Let's get along, Bergman.
Yes, I'll be with you in a moment. Isherwood. After this experience, I feel absolutely no shame before you. We are like two married men who meet in a house of ill repute. Come to see me in the morning.
By this time, I was into it. I went to Bergman's flat the next morning. He was no longer the emperor, but an old clown, shock-headed in his gaudy silk dressing gown. Tragicomic, like all clowns when you see them resting backstage after the show. The flat was tropically hot, under a heavy cloud of cigarette smoke.
Sit down, Isherwood. Welcome to the inferno. You have made the ascent to hell.
Oh, it can't really be as bad as that, can it, Peter?
Oh, it is. But tell me, one thing. Is your whole city as horrible as this?
Horrible? Well, this is the best part of it. Where do you see our slums and the suburbs?
You console me enormously, my good Virgil, who is to guide me through this Anglo-Saxon comedy.
I only hope I can.
You will do very well. Last night, I read your book, the novel.
Oh, The Memorial?
Yes, it's good except for the suicide. You make the suicide too congenial. But it's good, and I read it at midnight and again this morning in my bath. Then I wrote a poem, my first in English. Would you like to hear it?
Very much.
All right. Here it goes. When I am a boy, my mother tells to me it is lucky to wake up when the morning is bright and first of all, hear a lark sing. Now I am not longer a boy and I wake. The morning is dark. I hear a bird singing with unknown name in a strange country language. But it is luck, I think. Who is he, this singer who does not fear the grey city? Will they drown him soon, the poor Shelley? Will Byron's hangman teach him how one limps? I hope they will not, because he makes me happy.
Why? It's beautiful.
You like it? But you must correct the English, please.
Certainly not. I like it the way it is.
You do? Well, already I think I have a feeling for the language. I shall write many English poems.
May I keep this one?
Really? You want it?
Yes.
Oh, then I shall inscribe it to you. Loan me your pen.
Here you are.
For Christopher from Friedrich, his fellow prisoner.
I'll put it on the mantelpiece where all can see. And, is this your wife's picture?
Yes. And that is Inga with her, my daughter. You like her?
What beautiful eyes.
She's a pianist. Very talented.
I understand they're still in Vienna.
Unfortunately, yes. We had to leave Germany. We were run out of Berlin. Now the Nazis threaten Austria and Vienna is no longer safe. I wished for them to come with me, but my wife has to stay and look after her mother. I'm most anxious. The plague is spreading.
Do you think so?
Of course. Hitler will spread. We will have a brown art, brown literature, brown music, brown philosophy, brown science, and the Hitler religion with its Vatican at Munich and its Lourdes at Berchtesgaden.
Let us hope you're wrong.
Hope you're wrong. It's not easy, hope, when you're married. You're not married.
How did you know?
I know these things. You live with your parents?
With my mother. My father's dead.
Yeah. You're a typical mother's son. It is the English tragedy.
Oh. Quite a lot of Englishmen do get married, you know.
They marry their mothers. It is a disaster. It will lead to the destruction of Europe. But do not worry. We shall change all that.
All right. I promise not to worry.
Good. And now, my son, the horrible but unavoidable moment has come when we have to talk about this crime we are about to commit. This public outrage, this enormous nuisance, this scandal, this blasphemy. You have read the original script of Prata Violet?
They sent a messenger around with it last night.
And what did you think?
I think the title a trifle obscure.
Prata Violet? Oh, it's the story of a girl who sells violets in the Prater, the amusement park of Vienna. That's simple. And besides, Chatsworth is in love with the party. Tell me really, what do you think?
It's even worse than I expected.
Marvelous, excellent. You see, I am such a horrible old sinner that nothing is ever as bad as I expect. But you are innocent. It is this innocence which I need absolutely to help me with the film. The innocence of Alyosha Karamazov. I shall proceed now to corrupt you. Do you know what the film is, Christopher? I will tell you. The film is an infernal machine. Once it is ignited and set in motion, it revolves with enormous dynamism. It cannot pause. It cannot apologize. It cannot retract anything. It cannot wait for you to understand it. It cannot explain itself. It simply ripens to its inevitable explosion. This explosion we have to prepare, like anarchists, with the utmost ingenuity.
And so, like anarchists, we set to work on Trotter-Violet. I had always had a pretty good opinion of myself as a writer, but during the first days with Bergman, it was lowered considerably. I didn't know how people talked. For all my parlor socialism, I only knew the conversation of public schoolboys and neurotics. I thought I was competent, but I was wrong.
Oh, it's impossible.
Christopher, you're already discouraged again with your progress.
With 4 pages after 4 weeks, wouldn't you be?
All creation has its difficulties. Do not concern yourself too much with the camera. I will take care of the shots when the time comes.
But how can you shoot something if I don't give you something?
Just write dialogue. Create atmosphere. Try to give the camera something to listen to and look at. Here, let me picturize it, visualize it for you. It is a spring evening in old Vienna. Do you see it, Christopher? It is springtime in old Vienna of yesteryears. Dance halls are lighted up. The cafe houses are full. There's whipped cream floating on the coffee. The Prater, the amusement park, is filled with happy people. Swings are swinging. Gypsies tell fortunes. Lovers stroll arm in arm, whispering in the shadows of the elms and the silver poplars. And see, here comes a girl, Tony, who sells violets in the Prater. Little Tony, our Prater violet. Everybody knows her, and she has a smile for everybody. Good evening, Captain.
Good evening. Tonight you look lovelier than ever. You must be in love, eh?
I only wish that I were, Captain.
But how can you be so happy, Tony?
Because I know, Captain, that you will buy my violets.
You're so clever, Tony. As clever as you are beautiful.
He tries to kiss her, but she runs from him laughing. Always good humorously. Everybody loves Tony, but who does Tony love? Whom? Ah, see, down that alley, there where she wanders, carrying her basket of violets. Camera picks out a handsome youth, a student who falls instantly in love with light-hearted, fancy-free Tony. He tells her truthfully that his name is Rudolf, but he is not what he seems. He is really the crown prince of Borodonia!
Wait. That's wonderful. Now let me get it all down. Keep going.
No. Stop. It was awful.
It was wonderful.
No, it's tank. You would find out when you wrote it down. Then you would find out. We must do better than that. I will get some kind of an idea that we can write down. And we'll turn a battle of them out.
While we worked on our fantasy, the world was beginning to rot apart. At least twice a week, there was a bad day. Bergman's family stayed in Vienna, and the news worsened.
And so, as the new year approaches,
a note of confidence and optimism is found in many government circles. In Nuremberg this afternoon, Reich Chancellor Hitler, speaking before 60,000 uniformed members of the Nazi Party, said, "I want peace. Peace is necessary. Peace is essential to our times. Nazi Germany is committed to a program of peace."
Peace. Optimism. Will they keep on saying that even while the bombs are falling? Look at the clock, Christopher. Listen. It ticks every moment. Death comes nearer. Social disease, poverty, consumption, cancer. Discovered too late. My art is a failure. I had my doubts about this artificial violet from the very first. Even across half Europe it didn't smell so good. The world is dying, and we are working on a flop. We are dying with our heads in the oven. But don't answer it. It's probably the secret police.
Maybe the studio.
That's the same thing, but I suppose you must answer.
Isherwood here.
Oh, hello, you two. How are things?
Chatsworth, tell him we're not here. Oh, yes, Mr. Chatsworth. We're just fine, sir. Mr. Bergman has just stepped out.
Well, you can give him my personal message. Got bad news for you, too.
Hell?
Bulldog has changed its schedule. We'll have to start shooting in 2 weeks. Now, you tell Bergman he's got to come in and listen to the music. It's dandy. Got that?
Yes, sir. Dandy.
You come along, too, Isherwood. We want you to work with us straight through the picture. There.
He's gone. Did you hear what he said?
Yes, enough. So finally, Chatsworth assumes the black cap. At the end, the criminals are dragged into the dungeon. Well, never mind, my boy. We shall march to the guillotine together.
But what about the script? It isn't finished.
Ha! Never mind, Christopher. We have tried. We have honorably done our task. Now, like Socrates, we pay the penalty of those who believe in truth. We are to be thrown to the bulldog and devoured.
From Hollywood, the NBC Theater is bringing you a dramatization of Prater Violet by Christopher Isherwood. If you're interested in supplementing your enjoyment of these NBC Theater productions with home study under college supervision, be sure to listen to the announcement at the close of this program. And now our intermission commentator, Dr. Irwin Edmund.
Mr. Christopher Isherwood has repeatedly demonstrated that it is possible to be serious without being solemn. There is about his writing a half-deceptive casualness and gaiety which furthers rather than impedes the graver meanings of what he has to say. In this novel, short enough to be called a novelette, there is much of the surface satire of movie making, in England not so different from Hollywood as one might suppose. The story, moreover, is told casually in the first person. It is presumably Mr. Isherwood himself, reporting his experience in the job of working on a script with a fictional Austrian director, one Friedrich Bergmann. Bergmann is an anti-Nazi who sometime in the anxious 30s, on the eve of Hitler's invasion of his native country, has been called to England to bring his gifts to bear on the production of a movie, an English cliché of Vienna, with a poor flower girl selling flowers in the Vienna Prater, and the prince disguised, and all the wilted romantic accessories. The real story in the little novel is not the story of the movie, but the story of the making of it. This confection, this cheap and tawdry tinsel, made while the narrator, and more acutely the director Bergmann, are thinking of the real and agonized Vienna, the real and terrified Europe. The background of the action is history moving toward the desperate climax of the Second World War. The hardnesses, the frauds and politics of the little world of movie making have their counterparts in the larger scene of demagogues, spies, and public violence. Bergmann, the talented film director, becomes an image of the divided souls, the confused lives of a whole generation. He is world-weary, disillusioned, but he is also passionately concerned and involved in world tragedy. He is a sensitive, spirited Austrian, but he is a cosmopolitan, too. Greatly gifted, he has to use his gifts for the cheap purposes of the box office. This short novel exhibits, on the one hand, the small, phony realm of entertainment that still goes on, along with the search for profits in a collapsing civilization. On the other hand, there is a larger world, where the issues are not profits, but life and death. The small cosmos of movie making is no worse than any other. But like all self-absorbed groups, it forgot in the 30s that the whole of civilization is in danger. The book is timely still, for our little groups and classes and separate nations are in the same danger, are forgetting mortal danger today.
Thank you, Dr. Edmund. Our radio version of Prater Violet will continue from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification.
We started shooting the picture in the final week of January. What followed is so confused in my memory, so transposed and foreshortened, that I can only describe it synthetically. Bergman lent his genius to my poor scenes.
As the story of the Violet unfolded at Imperial Bulldog, I stood each day at a respectful distance behind Bergman's camp chair. Lawrence, the head cutter, watched with me, for he admired watching Bergman in action.
All right. Roll him.
Quiet.
Quiet. Quiet!
Roll him.
Farewell, Prince Rudolph. Farewell, farewell. I am going. Farewell.
No.
Cut.
Was there something wrong, Friedrich?
Let me tell you something, madame. The way you throw open that door is great. It is altogether too great. You give the movement a theatrical importance besides which the slaughter of Rasputin is just a quick breakfast. I will come and show you.
Alicia, would you old boy's in rare form today?
I admire him for working at all after the news from Vienna this morning.
Oh, yes. His family's out there, aren't they? There's something about that row this morning. The doubtless people have got dead workers all over Vienna, they say. Rotten luck for him.
Like this, madame. I am going. Farewell, you Rudolf, or whatever it is. Farewell. Then, through the door you go like an angel.
As we worked, the news seeped in from Austria. Vienna was a charnel house. In one building, Prince Starenberg saw 42 corpses laid out and commented, far too few. And Berlin looked on, smugly satisfied. Another of its enemies was being destroyed, and Hitler's hands were clean. I had lunch with Bergman right after we'd learned that Wallisch, one of the socialist leaders, had been caught near the Czech frontier and hanged at Leuben in a brightly lighted courtyard while his socialist fellow prisoners looked on. Long live freedom, he shouted. Then the hangman and his assistants pulled him from the scaffold and clung to his legs until he choked. This was the day that Bergman tried in vain to get through by phone to his family. Friedrich, you can try again late this afternoon.
It's no use. Even the telegram will be delayed for many hours. Days, perhaps.
But we must hope. After all, Vienna's a big city. The fighting is localized, the paper says. Probably it won't last.
This is
long.
Only the beginning. Now, anything might happen. Hitler has his opportunity. In a few hours, there can be war.
But he wouldn't dare. Mussolini would stop him. Didn't you read...
Chris. I'm so afraid.
Friedrich. Please don't, please.
My wife, my daughter. If by this evening I hear nothing, I must go to them.
But Friedrich...
What else can I do? I have no choice.
You wouldn't be able to help them.
You don't understand. How can I leave them alone at such a time? Already they have endured so much. You're very kind, Christopher. You're my only friend in this country. But you cannot understand. You have always been safe and protected. Your home has never been threatened. You cannot know what it is like to be an exile, a perpetual stranger. I am bitterly ashamed that I am here in safety.
But they wouldn't want you to be with them. Don't you realize? They must be glad you're safe. You might even compromise them. After all, lots of people know about your political opinions. You might be arrested.
Oh, that is unimportant. You do not understand.
But they wouldn't want you to leave the picture.
The picture! I spit on the picture. This heartless filth. This wretched lying charade. To make such a picture at such a moment is definitely heartless. It's a crime. It aids the Nazi gangsters, Starenberg, and the whole lot of them. It covers up the dirty sore with rose leaves, with the petals of the reactionary violet. It lies. And declares the pretty Danube is blue and the waters red with blood. I'm punished for assisting at this lie. We shall all be punished.
I say there. Hello, Isherwood.
Oh, hello, Patterson.
Do you mind if I pull up a chair and rest myself? Don't mind if I do.
Oh, do you gentlemen know each other?
Well, I've mentioned Dr. Bergman in my column, of course, but I'm afraid we've never been introduced.
Bergman, this is Patterson. He writes personal information about the films.
Delighted.
You write a movie column?
100,000 readers every morning. That's what they tell me down at the syndicate, and I believe it because my column gives the people the truth. Tell me, Mr. Bergman, what do you think of Austria?
What do you think of Austria, Mr. Patterson?
As a matter of fact, I think it's terrible, of course.
I'll tell you what you think. You think nothing. Nothing whatsoever.
Of course, I don't pretend to know much about politics, but...
This has nothing to do with politics. This has to do with plain human men and women. Not with actresses and industry courtesans. Not with celluloid. Not with self-advertisement. With flesh and blood. And you do not think about it. You do not care one jot.
Well, after all, Mr. Bergman, you must remember it isn't our affair. I mean to say you really can't expect people in England to care.
I expect everybody to care. Everybody who's not a coward, a moron, a piece of dirt. I expect this whole island to care. I will tell you something. If they do not care, they will be made to care. The whole lot of you will be bombed and slaughtered and conquered. And do you know what I shall do? I shall sit and smoke my cigar and laugh. And I shall say, yes, it's terrible. And I do not give a care. Not one.
Oh, please don't get me wrong, Mr. Bergman. I quite agree with you. I'm on your side entirely. Oh, yes. We don't think enough of the other fellow, and that's a fact. I must be tumbling along. Glad to have met you, Mr. Bergman. We must have a real talk someday. Ta-ta.
Pig.
That night in my room, I wondered whether I cared and how much. I was emotionally exhausted from caring. Perhaps I'd traveled too much, left my heart in too many places. I knew what I was supposed to feel, what it was fashionable for my generation to feel. We cared about everything. Fascism in Germany and Italy, the seizure of Manchuria, Indian nationalism, the Irish question, the workers, the Negroes, the Jews. We'd spread our feelings over the whole world. And I knew that mine was spread very thin. I cared. Oh, yes, I certainly cared about the Austrian socialists. But did I care as much as I said I did, or tried to imagine I did? No, not nearly as much. I felt angry with Patterson, but he at least was honest. What's the use of caring at all if you aren't prepared to dedicate your life to die? Next morning, Ashmead came out of the set. Oh, a diplomat, Ashmead. Chatsworth's number one boy. He stood silently beside me at the fire exit and watched as Bergman finished off a scene with the leading lady.
Cut! Print it!
Well, Friedrich, how did you like it?
I loved it, madame. I loved it. It was unspeakable horrible. It was the maximum of filth. Never in my whole life have I seen anything so idiotic.
Well... Do you want to shoot it again, Friedrich?
Yes, all right. By all means, let us shoot it again. Perhaps we can achieve something worse. I doubt it, but let us try. Did I ever tell you what talented young woman you are? You're the delight of my life.
Isherwood, step outside for a minute, will
you? How can I wish you not, Christian?
What can I do for you, Ashmead? I'll wait till we're through the door.
Never,
we don't want to be
alone. Never had I such a complete monster working in my flesh.
What's up, Ashmead?
Well, you know Chatsworth is very grateful to you. In fact, we all are.
Oh. I'm afraid I don't understand.
Well, I'm going to be very frank with you. This is between ourselves, of course. Chatsworth is getting worried. He simply can't understand Bergman's attitude.
Oh, how dreadful.
Everybody's complaining about him. The star talked to us yesterday. She wants to be released from the picture. You heard that row just now. After all, she's a big star. Bergman treats her like a bit player. It isn't only she either. There have been others.
Why are you telling all this to me?
You two are still great friends, aren't you?
Better than ever.
Well, can't you give us some idea of what's the matter with him? Isn't he happy here? What's he got against us?
Nothing. It's hard to explain what's wrong. You know he's worried about his family.
Ah, yes, this business in Austria. Yeah, that's pretty much all over now, isn't it?
On the contrary, it's probably just beginning.
Yes, I mean, the fighting's stopped. His family's safe. What more does he want?
Look here, Ashmead, it's no use our talking like this.
You couldn't possibly understand. You want the picture finished. I see that. Now, just be patient a little. He'll come round.
Well, I hope you're right. It's costing the studio a lot of money.
He'll come round. You'll see. I'm sure everything will be all right. Soon. I wasn't sure. I wasn't even hopeful, and Ashmead knew it. 2 days after our talk, I began to hear the name of Eddie Kennedy being murmured about. Kennedy was one of Bulldog's comedy directors, an expert on slapstick by virtue of a year in Hollywood. The rumors were around all morning, and then Lawrence, the head cutter, got me in a corner.
I suppose you heard, Chris.
Eddie Kennedy looked at our rushes this morning.
Well, that's funny. I was in the projection room myself. I didn't see him.
Of course you didn't. He saw them later. After you and Bergman had gone out.
I wonder why.
There's only one explanation, Chris. Figure it out for yourself.
You mean they're going to put Eddie Kennedy on Trotter Violet?
I don't see what else it can mean.
Gosh.
Do you think Bergman knows?
No, he'd have told me.
Well, then, in the name of heaven, don't tell him I told you.
Oh, Chris.
Well, we can't see your boy now.
Chris, what about lunch?
I'm not too hungry, Friedrich. Why don't you go on? Maybe I'll join you.
Oh, nonsense. You've got to eat. I would invite you too, Lawrence, but I want to see that footage of yours as soon as we get back. You can leave early tonight.
Right now.
Come on, Chris. Let us have a good lunch. What are you staring at, Chris?
Here comes that newspaper idiot again, Patterson.
Oh, yes. The man who does not care what happens to Austria. I wonder what's on this curtain's mind.
Must be something important to bring him back a second time.
I say, hello there. I hope I'm the first with the news.
What news?
Now, what's all this I hear? Is it really true?
It's what true? I don't understand you.
About the picture. Are you really dropping Trotter Violet?
Dropping?
Retiring. Giving it up.
Who told you this?
Oh, well, you know, these things get about. Oh, I say, I hope I haven't put my foot into it.
I never pay much attention to studio gossip.
Chris, you heard this too?
Well, I got this from pretty high up. It certainly sounded authentic. Eddie Kennedy was mentioned.
Oh, well, if that's all it was, it's quite easily explained. Just because he saw our rushes this morning.
Kennedy saw the rushes and I knew nothing about it, nothing. I wasn't even told. Chris, you knew this? You were in this conspiracy against me?
I didn't think it was important.
Not important? Oh, no, if I'm betrayed and tricked and lied to, it's not in the least important. If my only friend joins the enemy, it is not important. Who told you this?
Well, really, Mr. Bergman, I am not at liberty to say.
Of course you're not at liberty to say. These people are your paymasters. Very good. I will tell you who it was. Ashmead.
Oh, now,
Though it was Ashmead, I knew it. I'll deal with him later. But first, I must see his master Chatsworth at once.
I'm afraid I've been a bearer of evil tidings.
Well, look here, you aren't going to print any of this.
Well, I'll have to get it confirmed, naturally. If Mr. Bergman would care to make a statement...
He wouldn't.
I shall make a statement. Undoubtedly, I shall make a statement. Get nothing secret. Let the whole world know of this betrayal. I shall write to every newspaper. I shall reveal how a foreign director, a guest in this country, is betrayed. I regard this as a clear stab in the back. It is discrimination. It is persecution. I shall bring action for damages.
Yes. Well, I'd better be leaving. Good day.
Goodbye. There he goes, Christopher. Judas Iscariot to make his report to the high priests. Come on, we will have a little chat with that Curtin Ashmead and his boss, Chatsworth.
Won't you come in, please?
Take a pew, gentlemen.
First, I demand absolutely that this Fouché, this spy, shall leave the room.
Ashmead? Don't be silly. Nobody's going to leave any room. If you've got something to say, say it. This is as much Ashmead's business as mine.
So you protect him?
Certainly I protect all my subordinates until they're sacked. And I do the sacking.
You will not sack me. I do not give you that pleasure. I resign.
You do? Well, all my directors are always resigning, all except the lousy ones, worst luck.
Such as Mr. Kennedy, for example.
Eddie? Oh, he walks out on every picture. He's great.
You make fun of me.
I'm sorry, old boy, but you've been pretty funny yourself, you know.
I've stand this no longer. I am leaving.
Listen to me.
I shall not listen, not to your insults.
Nobody is going to insult you. Sit down.
All right. No insults.
Now listen to me. You walk off this picture. You break your contract. Well, that's your affair in the legal department. But meanwhile, somebody has to shoot this picture.
I am not interested. The picture means nothing to me. This is a case of abstract justice.
Somebody has to shoot this picture, and I have to see that it is shot.
My work has been spied upon behind my back. The rushes are shown to this ignorant creature.
Oh, come on. Let's get this straight. Eddie was shown the rushes by Ashmead quite unofficially because Ashmead was worried about the way the picture was going. He wanted an outside opinion. I knew nothing about it. As a matter of fact, Ashmead was taking a risk. He was breaking a studio rule. I might have been very angry with him. But under the circumstances, I think he did perfectly right.
Right.
Oh, I know you've been under the weather lately. I know your wife and daughter were in Vienna during this spot of bother, and believe me, I'm darn sorry. That's why I kept quiet as long as I have. But I can't throw away this studio's money because of your private sorrows, of mine or anybody else's.
And so you invite this analphabet to take my place?
I hadn't got as far as thinking of anybody to take your place. I didn't know you were going to walk out on us.
Now you set this Kennedy to work who will carefully annihilate every fragment Isherwood and I have built up so lovingly all these months.
Oh, a lot of it's good, I admit. But what am I to do? You've left us on the left.
Everything destroyed, obliterated, reduced to utter nonsense. Terrible. Nothing to do.
What do you care? You're not interested in this picture, Bergman.
Who says I'm not?
Well, you did.
I said nothing of the kind. I said I'm not interested in the picture which you, Eddie Kennedy, will make.
You said you weren't interested. Now, didn't he, Ashmead?
That's right, Mr. Chester.
It's a lie. I could never see such a thing. How could I not be interested? For this picture, I have given everything. All my life, all my thought, all my care, all my strength since months. Who dares say I'm not interested?
Attaboy, that's the spirit. Of course you're interested. I always knew you were. And if anybody says you're not, I'll help you knock the stuffing out of him.
Say,
I've just been struck by an idea. It came to me just this very moment.
Yes, Mr. Chester?
Look, tell you what, Bergman. You and I and Isherwood are going down to look at those rushes together. And we won't take Ashmead along either. That'll be his punishment, the dirty dog. Now, what do you say?
Well, all right. I will look.
Ashmead, you stay here. Mind?
Christopher, you come along with us.
Go ahead. I'll be along in a moment, please.
Very well. Come along, Bergman.
Well, Ashmead?
Well, what?
When did Chatsworth arrange for that screening to be set up?
Well, if you must know, first thing this morning.
Then this whole Kennedy business has been a hoax.
Oh, now, come, Isherwood. You're not going to tell Bergman and spoil everything.
I should.
No, but you mustn't, really. Then he'll feel like an even bigger fool. Look, they've gone down to Projection Room C, by the by. You really shouldn't miss this.
Want to run any more, Mr. Chatsworth?
That's enough, Lawrence. Unless you two gentlemen would like a section run off again.
Oh, it's terrible. Definitely horrible.
What do you say, Mr. Isherwood?
I'm sure I don't know what a film should look like at this stage.
Well, I wouldn't want to go as far as Bergman. That scene of Tony and the Prince's Tart.
You're wrong. It is terrible.
Well, I like your camera angle.
I hate them all. It's so poor, so dull. It's without mood. It's just a lousy newsreel.
I don't see what you could have done better.
You don't see, but I see clearly. The approach is wrong. My eyes are opened. I have been fumbling in the dark like an old idiot.
You think you can cure it?
Beginning tomorrow. I reshoot everything. I work night and day. It's perfectly clear to me. We shall keep our schedule. We shall make you a great picture.
We went back to work.
And the days which followed were unlike anything else I had ever known. I lost all sense of space and time. I was so tired. Everybody was tired, and yet we worked better than ever before. Even the actors didn't suck. Bergman inspired us all. His absolute certainty swept us along like a torrent. There were hardly any retakes. The script changes seemed to write themselves. Bergman knew exactly what he wanted. We took everything in our stride. On the last night, we worked very late. Bergman that evening was unforgettable. Very haggard, with blazing dark eyes and the furrowed mask of his face, he maneuvered the great crowd this way and that, molded it, reduced it to a single organism. I stood with Lawrence the cutter. We watched entranced until the last take was finished. Then Bergman went solemnly up to the star.
Thank you, my darling. You were great.
Friedrich, I'm sorry. I was naughty sometimes. I shall never have an experience like this again. I think you're the most wonderful man in the world.
Merci. I kiss your hand, madame.
Well, assured.
Now you see everything almost. Watch. Next, you shake hands with Ashmead.
I didn't know Ashmead was on the set.
Ashmead is always around. He's Chatsworth's boy. See? There he goes in behind the carousel.
Ashmead, you came to witness my final hour.
I never thought I'd see this. How could he? Ashmead is such a rotter.
Who else is going to pay for the champagne?
Marvelous, my dear Ashmead. Fellow artists, my dear friend, Mr. Ashmead tells me that they have champagne for all, courtesy of Imperial Bulldog.
Oh, what hypocrisy this is.
You mustn't take it so hard, Chris. It's what we always do, fight and scrap and argue. And then, when it's all over, they put their arms around each other and drink the loving cup. Come on, let's get ours.
Sure, why not? Let's get ours.
It was a fine party, and afterwards Bergman and I walked home together, alone on the King's Road. It was as wet, black, and deserted as the moon. It didn't belong to the King or any human being.
The river makes funny noises, like when the planes come with bombs.
I suppose it won't be long now.
No. Not long now.
I thought to myself, I am a traveler. I have no home. A traveler, a wanderer. I was aware of Bergman, my fellow traveler, beside me. A separate, secret consciousness for a short while sharing my wanderings. The waiter had recommended Prata Violet to us both. And like me, Bergman had his journey to go. I wanted to ask him, what makes you go on living? Why don't you kill yourself? Why is all this bearable? What makes you bear it?
The war is already with us, Christopher. Everywhere in Europe is death.
The waiter had recommended Bergman, I supposed. Now, what would come next? Love again, perhaps. Or would it be death? Feared, the longed-for sleep. Death with its army of fears. Not the acknowledged fears, the fears that are advertised, more dreadful than those. The private fears of the high dive. Fear of the farmer's dog and the vicar's pony. Fear of cupboards, fear of the dark passage. And behind them, most unspeakably terrible of all, the arch fear. The fear of being afraid. It can never be escaped, never. Not if you run away to the ends of the earth. Not if you yell for mummy or keep a stiff upper lip or take to drink or to dope. That fear is always enthroned in my heart. I carry it with me always. But at this moment, how infinitely faint, like the far high glimpse of a goat track through the mountains between the clouds, do I see something else. The way that leads to safety. Where there is no fear, no loneliness, no need of love. For a second I glimpse it. For an instant it is even quite clear.
And then the clouds shut down, and the breath off the glacier, icy with the inhuman coldness of the peaks, touches my cheek. No, I think I would never do it. Rather the fear I know, the loneliness I know. For to take that other way would mean that I should lose myself. I should no longer be a person. I should no longer be Christopher Isherwood. No, no. That's more terrible than the bonds. More terrible than having no lover. That I can never face.
Well, Christopher, here we are.
Oh, yeah, yes, your apartment.
Perhaps I will see you in the morning. There are a few details that must be cleared up at the studio.
Yes, in the morning.
Well then, I must go up. Good night, my child.
Perhaps then I might have turned to Bergman and asked, who are you? Who am I? What are we doing here? But actors cannot ask such questions during the performance. We'd written each other's parts, and we had to go on playing them as long as we were together. The dialogue was crude, the costumes and makeup were more absurd, more of a caricature than anything in Prater Violet. Mother's boy, the comic foreigner with a funny accent. Well, that didn't matter. Beneath our disguises, despite all the kind, unkind things we might ever say or think about each other, we knew. Beneath outer consciousness, two other beings, anonymous, impersonal, without labels, had met and recognized each other and had clasped hands. He was my father, I was his son, and I loved him very much. As it happened, I never got round to seeing Prater Violet. And as for Bergman, Prater Violet got him the offer of a job in Hollywood. He went out there with his family early in 1935.
You have been listening to Prater Violet, an NBC Theater production of the novel by Christopher Isherwood. If you wish to increase your knowledge and appreciation of literature, we suggest that you might enjoy the college-supervised courses now being offered in connection with the NBC Theater. For full information, write to NBC Theater in care of one of the following universities or colleges: the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky; the University of Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma; Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas; Washington State College, Pullman, Washington; University of Arizona, Tucson, Arizona; Texas College of Arts and Industries, Kingsville, Texas; and the Brooklyn College, Brooklyn, New York. You also have a chance to win a set of the famous Encyclopedia Britannica. Several of the universities and colleges offering these courses are giving the Encyclopedia as prizes to the students doing the best work. Enroll in a supervised course and you may be one of the fortunate ones to win the Encyclopedia Britannica. Be with us at the NBC Theater next week for a dramatization of Elizabeth Bowen's The House in Paris, and the following week for Imperial Palace by Arnold Bennett. Prater Violet was adapted for the NBC Theater by Richard E. Davis. Our intermission commentator was Dr. Irwin Edmond, whose commentary was recorded. In today's cast, Whitfield Connor was Christopher, Doris Lloyd played his mother, Harry Martin, the BBC announcer, Fritz Feld was Bergman, Alec Harford, the clerk, Ramsey Hill was Chatsworth, Eileen Erskine played Tony, Gilbert Fry, Lawrence, Donald Morrison was Patterson, John Dodsworth, Ashmead, and your announcer, Don Rickles. The director of the NBC Theater is Andrew C. Love. this program came to you from Hollywood. What's on NBC today? Comedy on the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. Mystery on the Adventures of Sam Spade. And drama in Theater Guild on the Air, when Paulette Goddard, Pat O'Brien, and Tom Drake star in The Trial of Mary Dugan. For all-around stellar entertainment, stay tuned to this NBC station. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.